I hiked up to Holden Lake on Sunday, and magnificent day, what the snow was doing and that sort of thing, and the weather and all. And on my way down, about halfway down the hill on this side, there were four young people who were workers here in the village, and one of them had been at one of the earlier sessions, and she said, "Hi, Roman," she says, "you have a poem for us?" And I said, "I don't think I do." She said, "How about a nature poem? Could you give us one?" And so I thought of it, and I couldn't come up with one. And I said, "You know," and she said, "No, I brought my nature poems with me the last hike," but she said she didn't have it here. So I said I could deliver a Hopkins poem, and with a God dimension in it. So they said, "Hooray!" So there we were on that magnificent mountainside with the snow and the wind and that sort of thing. And I gave them God's grandeur from memory. Here it is. "The world is charged with the grandeur of God. It will flame out like shining from shook foil. It gathers to a greatness like the ooze of oil crushed. Why do men now not wreck his rod? Generations have trod, have trod, have trod, and all is seared with trade, bleared, smeared with toil, and wears man's smudge and shares man's smell. The soil is bare now, nor can foot feel being shod. And for all this, nature is never spent. There lives the dearest freshness deep down things. And though the last lights off the black west went, oh, morning at the brown brink eastward springs, because the Holy Ghost over the bent world broods with warm breast and with, bright flames." So it was a very appropriate place for that poem. In fact, I had never run that poem through my mind in a place that I considered more worthy of it. Okay, let's see here. Where should we go? Let's look at Pied Beauty at diagonally across the page. "Glory be to God for dappled things, for skies of couple colors, a brinded cow, for rose moles, all in stipple on trout that swim. Fresh fire coal, chestnut falls, finches wings, landscape plotted in peace, fold, fallow, and plow, and all trades, their gear and tackle and trim. All things counter, original, spare, strange, whatever is fickle, freckled, who knows how, with swift, slow, sweet, sour, a dazzled dim, he fathers forth whose beauty is past change. Praise him." Maybe you can see from the manner of Hopkins' poetry why he was neglected for so long. He really wasn't taught in the schools, in the universities, until the 50s and 60s. Then there were some scholars who were promoting his work, and he caught on pretty strongly. And
he likes alliteration.
I beg your pardon?
He likes alliteration.
Oh, yes, yeah. He certainly, many consider him to have had the best writing ear of any writer ever, the way that he works with sound. When asked, "What is poetry?" he said it is speech framed for the contemplation of the mind by way of hearing. And his point was, you can't get at a poem if you don't let the music of the poem come through your ear. Even the imagined rhythms that you can know by reading from your own knowledge of the rhythms of the language, his poetry is so strong you just want to read it aloud. Let's turn to the other side, okay?
Would you say that generally, Roman?
Say that again?
Would you say that generally it is true that it's better to read poetry out loud rather than just sort of read it to yourself?
Well, I think a combination of the two is the best. I think at some time you want to try it aloud to get at that rhythm. It's possible, I suppose, that someone who is highly trained in music can look at a musical score and take a lot of richness from it. But sooner or later, that person is probably going to want to hear it performed, sung, or with the instruments that it was written for. But in the study of the work, of course, you're going to spend a whole lot of time, I think, in at least if it's a difficult poem, trying to get it to come clear, to explicate it for yourself and to interpret it, that sort of thing. But I think that there are some poems that are so shallow, so probably undeserving, that you can read them once or twice and dismiss them and say, well, I think I know that one. It doesn't need any more work. That makes sense? Mm-hmm.
Yes. What meaning would you put to the word fathers for?
We might discuss that one. So no problem. Ask for answers before we... Oh. Everybody has a chance to.
Oh, I wasn't familiar with it.
Okay. The Lantern Out of Doors, page 30, upper left. Sometimes a lantern moves along the night that interests our eyes. You see, he lived at a time when we did that. I don't know if any of you are old enough and have lived in the country where people went walking with lanterns. If we would go to church at night and we had to walk from the house about a quarter mile away, we'd oftentimes carry a lantern. And of course, we always carried it when we went night hunting, but it's pretty unusual to carry the kind of lantern that he probably was carrying. But I do see people walking around here with flashlights, that sort of thing. So,
yeah. I remember lanterns that railroad conductors are help carry at night.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you ever find one of those, you've got a treasure. Those things go for thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
We
use one for camping, I think.
What?
When I was young, we used one for camping.
Sure.
A lantern.
So I guess we do have lanterns, yeah. Not on our rural or our urban streets. So sometimes a lantern moves along the night that interests our eyes. And who goes there, I think? Where from and bound, I wonder, where, with, all down darkness wide, his waiting light, men go by me whom either beauty bright in mold or mind or whatnot else makes rare. They rain against our much thick and marsh air, rich beams, till death or distance buys them quite. Death or distance soon consumes them. Wind what most I may, I after, be in at the end I cannot, and out of sight is out of mind. Christ minds, Christ's interest, what to avow our men there, eyes them, heart wants, care wants, foot follows kind, their ransom, their rescue, and first, fast, last friend. He's a good example of what I was talking about a couple of days ago. I just mentioned how important it is to be able to be patient enough to reorder the syntax into your own natural syntactical structure, the flow of the language, subject, verb, object, is our main passage. I shot a bird, okay? But Hopkins, to achieve the rhythm that he wants and to give attention to particular words, he'll disorder the syntax there, so he'll just throw words on the page and say the guy was drunk when he did this. And he was. He was probably inebriated with the sounds that were in his ear. So you have to be patient with him. So that was the lantern out of doors, and here's the candle indoors. He's now outside. See, the other one, he was out inside. The candle, some candle burns somewhere I come by. I muse at how its being puts blissful back with mellowy moisture, mild nights blear all black, or to-fro tram beams truckle at the eye. By that window, what task, what fingers ply? I plod, wondering, a-wanting, just for lack of answer, the eagerer a-wanting. Jesse or Jack, their God to aggrandize, God to glorify. Come you indoors, come home. Your fading fire mend first, and vital candle in close heart's vault. You there are master, do your own desire. What hinders? Are you being blind, yet to a fault in a neighbor deft-handed? Are you that liar and cast by conscience out, spend-saver's salt? And here's one of, he had a series of sonnets called Desolation Sonnets, the one right at the bottom there. We'll look through that one. A rather different mode. I wake and feel the fell of dark, not day. What hours, oh, what black hours we have spent this night. What sights you, heart, saw, ways you went, and more must in yet longer light's delay. With witness I speak this, but where I say hours, I mean years, mean life. And my lament is cries countless, cries like dead letters sent to hearest, dearest him that lives, alas, away. I am gall, I am heartburn. God's most deep decree, bitter would have me taste. My taste was me. Bones built in me, flesh filled, blood brimmed the curse. Self, yeast of spirit, a dull dough sours. I see the lost are like this, and their scourge to be as I am mine, their sweating selves, but worse. And here's a poem that I want you to consider as possible ones for our discussion today. But no, first let's read Spring and Fall, okay, down at the bottom there on the right-hand side. Spring and Fall to a Young Child. I remember this poem very, very fondly because the teacher that I had at the time was doing some work with Hopkins poems, and he asked me to illustrate something that he was doing. So we went into the Colorado Mountains, and I was shooting aspens and some other things that he had selected as illuminating pictures for this particular piece right here, the Spring and Fall one. Margaret, are you grieving over Golden Grove unleaving? Leaves, like the things of man, you with your fresh thoughts care for, can you? Ah, as the heart grows older, it will come to such sights colder by and by, nor spare a sigh, though worlds of wormwood leaf me a lie. And yet you will weep and know why. Now no matter, child, the name, sorrow's springs are the same. Nor mouth had, no, nor mind, expressed what heart heard of, ghost guessed. It is the blight man was born for. It is Margaret you mourn for. Binsey Poplars, felled in 1879. My aspens dear, whose airy cages quelled or quenched in leaves the leaping sun, all felled, or all felled. Of a fresh and following folded rank, not spared, not one that dandled, a sandaled shadow that swam or sank on meadow and river and wind-wandering, weed-winding bank. Oh, if we but knew what we do when we delve or hew, hack and rack the growing green. Since country is so tender to touch, her being so slender, that like this sleek and seeing ball, but a prick will make no eye at all. Where we mean to mend her, we end her when we hew and delve. Aftercomers cannot guess the beauty then. 10 or 12, only 10 or 12 strokes of havoc unsell this sweet especial scene, rural scene, a rural scene, sweet especial rural scene. Want you to keep that mind, that voice, that situation, that person's awareness, anguish, if you will, in mind, and now read him here on 29, on the other side. Now, we might want to consider these two poems in that position. Consider them, I'll give you some suggestions. The Sea and the Skylark. On ear and ear, two noises too old to end a trench. Right, the tide that ramps against the shore with a flood or a fall, low, low off, or all roar, frequenting there while moon shall wear and wend. Left hand, off land, I hear the lark ascend, his rash breast, rewinded, new skeined score, in crisps of curl off wild winch whirl, and pour and pelt music till none's to spill nor spend. How these two shame this shallow and frail town, how ring right out our sordid, turbid time, being pure. We, life's pride and cared for crown, have lost that cheer and charm of earth's past prime. Our make and making break are breaking down to man's last dust, drained fast towards man's first slime. I think it'd be interesting if we looked at his two statements there, Binsey Poplars and The Sea and the Skylark, and compared and contrasted them and see what you discover from them. Or if you would prefer, we could take one of those and set it against these two on page 7. So I'll let you make that decision. So think hard now. On page 7, there are two more poems. Eight Cylinder Man. These are not Hopkins, okay? And I forgot to bring the name, and I don't remember the name of this poem. Eight Cylinder Man. He grinds the clover at its root with a creaking and enormous foot. In his circumference vast and dim, no small light has a place for him. The needlepoint of curious moss where delicate footprints cross, the brook composing mountain blues, the bereaved and cynical ewes, columbines dancing on the wall, these he has never seen at all. Speed is the only register within his mind, and in that blur of gas and gleaming chromium, he adds the swiftly mounting sum of miles, a purely abstract space, and passes summer face to face. And then the world is too much with us, the Wordsworth piece. The world is too much with us, late and soon, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. Little we see in nature that is ours. We have given our hearts away a sordid boon. The sea that bears her bosom to the moon, the winds that will be howling at all hours are upgathered now like sleeping flowers. For this, for everything, we are out of tune. It moves us not. Great God, I'd rather be a pagan, suckle in a creed outworn. So might I, standing on this pleasant lee, have glimpses that would make me less forlorn, have sight of Proteus rising from the sea, or hear old Triton blow his breathed horn. So, I want you to choose what you want to do. Benzie Poplars and Sea and the Skylark, or these two and one of Hopkins' poems. Well, we can stay through dinner and do everything. Work at a poem that way, bit by bit by bit. You forget that you're actually making progress. You forget that you're a different person with the poem than you were when you started. And I think one way to know that you have really succeeded in doing something is to look at the whole poem again later. And I'm going to read these to you now, and you, as I do, say to yourself, what did you say? Yeah. My gosh, I didn't know that on the first reading. What was an absolute mishmash of words has become somewhat clear, perhaps. And also, you can be thinking about your answer to my question. I want to know, if you were to be banished to that mythical island, never again to return, and you were allowed to take with you one poem, and it had to be chosen from between these two, which of these two poems would you take with you? That's the only poem you would ever have for the rest of your life. I won't answer that yet, but think about that as we look through them. Here we go. Benzie Poplars. Fell, 1879. Somebody noted that leaves was misspelled. I didn't notice that the first time, too. My aspens dear, whose airy cages quailed, quailed or quenched in leaves the leaping sun, all fell, felled, or all fell. Of a fresh and following folded rank, not spared, not one that dandled a sandaled shadow that swam or sank on meadow and river and wind-wandering, weed-winding bank. Oh, if we but knew what we knew when we delve or hew, hack and rack the growing green, since country is so tender to touch, her being so slender, that, like this sleek and seeing ball, but a prick will make no eye at all, where we, even where we mean to mend her, we end her, when we hew and delve. Aftercomers cannot guess the beauty beam. 10 or 12, only 10 or 12 strokes of havoc unsell this sweet, especial scene. Rural scene, a rural scene, sweet, especial, rural scene. The Sea and the Skylark. One ear and ear, two noises too old to end, trench. Right, the tide that ramps against the shore, with a flood or a fall, low, low off or all roar, frequenting there while moon shall wear and wend. Left hand, off land, I hear the lark ascend, his rash breast, rewinded new skinning score, in crisps of curl off wild winch whirl, and pour and pelt music till none's to spill nor spend. How these two shame this shallow and frail town. How ring right out our sordid, turbid time, being pure. We, life's pride and cared for crown, have lost that cheer and charm of earth's past prime. Our make and making break are breaking down to man's last best, drain fast towards man's first slime. Why did I put those two poems on the same program?
About nature? Only.
Well, my destructive nature.
Ecology.
Which does a better job?
I think the second one.
Yeah.
We did the second one.
The second one laments what went on in the first one.
The sea and the skylark?
Yeah.
Does what?
They lament what's gone on with all those trees going down.
And that one does a better job, the sea and the skylark.
I'm telling you so.
Sea and the skylark is much more.
He knew he'd be glad he doesn't want to say.
Sea and Mariana?
It's much more profound.
More profound.
Much more to it than one.
Aaron, you're just in time for the truth. Betty, what were you going to say? Come into the circle. This one? Go ahead, Betty.
If he thought it was bad now, he'd be sick at heart. If it was bad then, it's bad much worse now. Turn of the century, he's already saying that for this. Nature is being exhausted or draining fast toward man's first slime. He would have been an environmentalist.
Do you agree with him?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said.
You agree with him in the sea and the skylark?
Mm-hmm.
In the other one, from the poppers, maybe they were whitening the room. They had to. That happens. I've seen a whole row of oak trees go down before they whitened the road. Beautiful oak trees. And that lane of traffic had to go over there. And around the cemetery where we live, there's big evergreens. And the state said there had to be another passing lane, and those pine trees had to grow.
Would Hopkins approve of that?
No.
He would approve, just like I feel.
Did the county commissioners approve of it? Did the Department of Transportation approve?
Department of Transportation did.
Oh, in Oregon, they protest every tree that's going to be taken down. It's a big deal. They can hardly trim trees. We have to get permission to take a tree out.
I want to see what's where we are on that question. Several people have said that they would prefer the sea and the skylark. Betty, what did you say? Which would you think?
Sea and the skylark.
You would. Yeah. And I think Joyce said it was profound. Is that right?
Yeah.
Anyone who said that? What do you mean?
Well,
go ahead.
I would take the poplars.
Go ahead.
Because I think the other is too depressing. If I were going to spend the rest of my life with a poem, that would really depress me. That was all I knew.
Why does the sea and skylark poem depress you more?
Because it sounds so, it's a lot bleaker. At least with the aspens, I could picture them, you know, and they were alive. But this other, it's just.
And it's funny because it has the opposite effect on me.
Is that true?
I can, from his first part of it, I can feel the tide, the coming in, the going out of the tide.
Yeah.
It's a sound I love.
Yeah.
And then just picturing in mind, you know, a skylark with his beautiful song, mm-hmm. Those two sounds would, to me, they would be wonderful music.
I think that's more challenging, seeing the skylark than the other one.
It is.
I'm going to stay with this, but I don't remember your name.
Helen,
yeah. Where do you find Mary Ellen says that the first lines up here, the first eight lines, the octet, is delightful. What did you say?
Well,
inspired?
Is.
I can't remember your word. Mm-hmm. Pleasant?
It's music.
Music.
Yeah. Oh, well, I wouldn't argue with that. That's mm-hmm. true. But we're talking about living with this poem. Of course, I haven't lived by a sea, and maybe that might
I mean, I've been by a sea, but I've never lived.
They live by the Sea of Wisconsin, they do.
They have these machines that people, they can't sleep on the river or the sea or something, and it puts them to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can't, you know, they're just restless and can't sleep, so they have a problem. And so that would maybe be more soothing.
I don't know, see, I have a lot of poppers on my waste place, and maybe that's the reason. I can sit back and I could always picture these poppers at the sun. And the leaves rustling, and I could put a few birds in there even if they're not in the pool. That's just my choice, and I'm not saying that it's the right one, but it would be the right one for me.
Where is the depressing element in the Sea of the Skylark? In what line do you find
it? Oh, it's toward the end there, mostly.
You want to read a passage, please?
Well, let's see. I don't know, our making and making break are breaking down to man's last dust, streaming fast towards man's first spawn. I mean, that just pulls me down.
I can understand that, but having stood at the side of Lake Michigan many times, I mean, to me it's the most wonderful experience, and see the tide go in and out, and then with the Skylark, and these last two lines are reality.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess
all reality.
I just kind of turn it into this slime and then think what could be done, and also then go back to watching those waves and God's creation.
But also, you know, it says being pure. We've lost that chair. Does that mean that we can't regain that chair? And, okay, maybe we're draining like the tide, you know, maybe that's part of it. Our life is draining away daily, but I didn't feel that because, you know, this is the sadness, maybe we have lost the chair, but maybe we could regain it, maybe that's...
Who has that chair and charm?
Pardon?
Who has that chair and charm?
The what?
The pureness of the... I mean, he said these two are pure.
Who are those?
The Skylark and the sound, the tide. Those two sounds, those two noises, that's the way I read it.
And you began by asking, is he saying that we have actually lost that cheer and charm? Do you think, what's your answer to your own question?
He says, life's pride and cared for crown, have lost that cheer and charm of earth's past time.
Is that accurate?
Well, he thinks so.
I want to know, this is my third level of question, the evaluation. Do you agree with Hopkins that we have lost that cheer and charm?
No, I don't think so.
What do you say?
I pretty much think we have lost it.
We have lost it.
That there's some still searching for their Earth's prime, but...
Has Esther lost it?
No.
No.
And she's not part of we.
I don't think I'm part of we.
What you're saying is they, all those other guys over there.
I think maybe it was lost for a while and it's coming back. Found again. It seemed that the wonderful thing, even though this is chopping down trees and that, I think of going down the Mississippi goes through our town, which it's so beautiful. And they build a civic center and that would be nice. We went down going through and I thought, I'm going to look out and just see how the river looks. And I look down, and what is the big black parking lot down there? Just when I expected to see beauty, all I saw was this big black parking lot right on the banks of the Mississippi. They could just put them on the back because they've lost their...
Is our appetite in this country larger or smaller in the 90s for skylarks and poplars and ocean waves than it was in the 50s. Have you lived that long? Sarah, what do you say?
I can tell you that I...
Try that again?
I haven't really, I wasn't around during the 1950s.
Well, this is an outside the point question, related, but I said, is our appetite as a nation, do we have a larger appetite now to hear the skylark and the sea and to see these untouched poplars than we had in the 50s?
Well, for me, of course, yes, it is.
But as you observe your fellow citizens.
Okay. I'd have to think about it.
Good.
Well, yeah. I think some of us know we're losing a lot, but we've got to do something about it. And I think we're waking up to the fact that something has to be done to preserve.
It's not quite my question. My question is, our yearning to hear seas and skylarks and to see poplars, do we have a greater need for that now in the 90s than we had in the 50s? As a nation.
Much harder.
It's much harder to get to a place that's untouched and unspoiled. And they have just thousands of people in Yellowstone.
But they see it painless, that skylarks.
But this goes back before the 50s, isn't it? When was it written?
Well, yes, but I was just asking about a time that we might have some grip on, those of us who are over 30.
You drive far to see trees and sky and ocean.
I think we see this in the moving out to the people moving out of urban areas because they want to get out where they can see the trees and so forth. We see it
in
the exits from cities. We see people on vacations, you know, they want to get out to Holden Village.
Can you appreciate a skylark? Did you want to say something? Can you appreciate a skylark as much as your parents and grandparents do? You can't. David, do you?
Yeah, I think I appreciate it more. It was more common then. They didn't. Mm-hmm. They didn't. It just. They heard as much. Wasn't anything special. But now it's something more special, I think, for us.
How about you, Aaron? Can you appreciate any dimension of nature more than your parents?
Yes and no. I think we appreciate different things.
Okay.
I think we appreciate, we both...
Talk just about yourself.
Yeah, my parents and myself both appreciate nature, but we do it in different ways probably. Very wrong, the things that we value, the things that I see in nature that I value, my parents have, or my, you know, mom or dad have certain values that they see within nature that they subscribe to, I think.
Do you get more delight than your parents did, Esther, from natural phenomena?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
How about you, Betty?
We lived in St. Louis, and and we just, you know, we had a few birds around, but where we live now, and since I've been married, I'm just much more aware of the beauty of.
Do you make more effort to have those experiences than your parents?
Yes. Yes.
Is that true?
Yes, I do.
Is that right?
I think so.
Yes, I do.
My parents never had bird feeders. Backwards, and I can't remember ever, you know, much excitement. And we lived in the country.
Are you saying your parents made as much effort to, or they didn't?
They didn't.
Maybe it was more available.
It was so common that you didn't.
They just took it for granted.
See, that's what makes it sad for me, though, is that it was more common, and that's what I think about, is that it's not what it used to be, and it makes it more, I appreciate it, but it makes it hard, because it's like a sadness.
And we have so many environmental groups now who are telling us this is becoming endangered and so forth, so we're maybe not aware of it, too.
I want to read a passage from one of his other poems. We've seen these two, and you know what his voice is here, in The Sea and the Skylark, and in Binsey Poplars, where in one he says, where we mean to mend her, we end her, he says. Okay, in The Sea and the Skylark, he says, we, life's pride and cared for a crown, have lost that cheer and charm of earth's past prime. Go over to God's grandeur on the other side. In the fourth line down, why do men now not wreck his rod? We trod all his seared, betrayed beard, smeared, betrayed where men sweat and shed men smell, the soil is burned up when put through me shot. And for all this, The Binsey poplars are never spent. You know what it says? No. And for all this, nature is never spent. There lives the dearest freshness deep down things. And though the last lights off the black west went, oh, morning at the brown break, eastward springs, because the Holy Ghost of the dead will move the warm breast and with awe bright wings. Which of those poems do you think he wrote first? In one, what does he see? The regenerative power of the divine force. In the others, he sees human forces wrecking them. Where's the real Hopkins? Is he accurate in each one? Mm-hmm. Is he? Explain that, Kenna.
I just read something that talked about that no matter what, nature will prevail. Nature will always come back. That actually what we're scared of is preserving ourselves as a human race. And so I think he's accurate in both. Nature is regenerative. We see that all the time. But we're also doing a lot of damage. But what are we damaging? Because we are part of nature.
This was more than a century ago.
He
wrote this more than a century ago. We're seeing what's happened since then, and today especially.
That's a good point. What would Hopkins do today?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I need to
think. On I-5 in Seattle at 5 o'clock.
It's beyond
the earth. I think almost beyond the peril when we foul the seas. I mean, this is a lot of water out there to be too impure even to go near, or you know, to enjoy at all. I'm not sure how soon that can be reversed.
Well, I think even the generation, my parents and my grandparents, certainly would be
appalled
at what I see.
I'm sure you'll crush some food.
Well, thank you for introducing me to this
meeting. Oh, they're baskets.
Yeah.
Food, food.
I never read any of this.
All I see is trees cut down and.
It's interesting. Are you sure?
Yeah.
We can leave those.
Okay.
Thank you. We don't know.
We get just one meal tonight, don't we? Yeah. Outside meal. Everybody eats at one time.
Well, that's right.
At what time?
5:15.
5:15.
I'd like to tell you where my spot is. I have to go down to the city. I'd love you to go up there and sit down sometime.
10 miles away?
No! Okay. If you go through the covered bridge,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you go up and there's a road to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going up that real steep
mm-hmm.
and climb to the left. And then you walk and you'll be kind of one feeling. And then you keep walking, the road kind of goes around a little bit, and then it goes up a little bit, and you're kind of on a second tailing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you walk out this way, because you walk in this way, and then you turn.
Walking back toward the lake.
And you walk, you know, off far enough so that you have a clear view of all around, and it's like a panorama. It's, Carl and I walked there again today, and it's just gorgeous up here.
I went up the hill the other time. I went up into the.
If you can go this way, and I
know where that is.
Okay, and it's just a kind of the second level.
Where are you turning
off? Well, there's a little road. When you
instead of turning right to the.
Turn left? Yeah. Instead of going straight up, where it's really a very steep climb. You go across a covered bridge, and then you go up.
You go up to where the garage is?
You don't go that far.
Okay.
There's a little road that goes off to the left. I think it's a Copper Creek or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you go past the turbine, past the...
Past the hydro.
Yeah.
But at the sawmill level, you take a left turn.
That's right.
Parallel to the street.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And then you go up, and then you will come to one area where it's a tailing, and then you keep on that road and kind of go to the right and then go up to the second tailing, mm-hmm. the second level.
Yeah.
And they are trying to grow trees up there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I looked down on it from the third level.
Well, but the thing you have to do is, when you get up there, you turn to the left, which means you're going to be coming this way.
Come back towards the creek.
Yeah, so you're far enough that you can just see all over. Well, not the valley, the mountain.
Oh, you can.
It's just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And today, the sun was shining on some mountains way over there, and they all had pink tones. Mm-hmm. And there's only one thing, then there's a log, and I sit on that log, and there's only one tree, and it would be a perfect Christmas tree, that would be in your view, if you look around. It's just